Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is The Savage Nation. I'm going to talk about the death of the U.S. Marine Corps under Barack Obama. Came to me from USDefenseWatch.com. As reported this week by Military.com, Marines across the Corps will be challenged on their unconscious prejudices and presuppositions, in other words, thought control, as women get the opportunity to become Marines for the first time. Unconscious prejudices and the opportunity to become grunts for the first time. Unconscious prejudices by Marines and presuppositions defined as simple facts, such as women lack the upper body strength, the aerobic lung capacity, testosterone for aggressiveness, that they're more prone to injuries, while they possess a myriad of hygiene issues in the field that men do not encounter. Those are all false. You get that out of your head. Women are not different than men. They have no hygienic differences on the field. You get that out of your mind. Where did you get that trash from, that misogynistic garbage? That's what they're going to tell the men to think about. How? The Marine Corps is rolling out mandatory training for all Marines for the first time in history, in order to brainwash them into believing what is false and forgetting what is real. That's Barack Obama the liar at work, who's on a vendetta, on a crash program to destroy the Marine Corps before he is finally sent out to pasture to ruin the world. The U.S. Marines are the latest casualty in the Maoist Cultural Revolution being shoved down the throat of the military and incinerating the fighting spirit and readiness of the armed forces like a five-alarm fire. They're sending out psychopathic women like Colonel Ann Weinberg, a real hero, Colonel Ann Weinberg. She's going to go around the country like modern-day Soviet zampolites or political officers in order to brainwash officers in the Marines that putting women in combat units on the front lines is doable and unnegotiable. So I'll give you some of the examples of what they're going to do, because if I wrote this, you'd say I'm making it up and I'm biased. I'm reading an article from USDefenseWatch.com on the Savage Nation. But I'll summarize it with the end of the article. The Marine Corps rolled out a commander's toolkit of optional online classes on similar topics in late 2014 when Barry was still in his heyday, as they were getting ready to force women on the front lines. And the U.S. Marine Corps commander's toolkit in 2016 includes not how to defeat ISIS by killing them first, not how to shoot the enemy in the face before he shoots you in the face first, but, and I'm not making this up, this is a kit given out to commanders of the Marine Corps by Barry's insane commanders, pregnancy simulators, breast pumps, tactical lactation station overlays, red high heels, and a proper procedure to set up a unisex latrine. If I made this up, you'd say you're crazy. It's not even funny, but I'm not making it up. These are insane communists running the military, put in power by the most insane president in American history. You're going to understand why we'll never be able to win a war again, and that ISIS is laughing all their way to Geneva. We must stop these Maoist psychotics before they destroy the last great fighting force on the planet. And when we have a man in the White House who is more concerned with the economy of Mexico than he is with the economy of America, when we have a man who is like King Ludwig II, look it up, King Ludwig, the Mad King of Bavaria, who bankrupted his own treasury for his own self-aggrandizement. He built a palace on one of the lakes in Bavaria called Schloss Herrenchiemsee. He was a young king, was not ready for the job like Obama, and he was a profligate spender, and he was a madman. And he bankrupted the Bavarian treasury by building these edifices for himself, including a copy of the Palace of Versailles on this lake in Bavaria. It bankrupted the Bavarian treasury. It was a direct copy of the Palace of Versailles in the middle of nowhere in Bavaria. That's why they called him the Mad King of Bavaria, King Ludwig II. Obama is kind of a King Ludwig II. The difference is that we have no sober statesman to stop him, which they should have stopped him at Munich. That's a joke, for those of you who know what that means. If this guy had been stopped at Munich back in the first 4 years of his regime for the excesses he was pulling off on the American people, we wouldn't be in the situation we are in today. But we are in the situation. And the madman is not going to stop because no one's stopping him. No one's even criticizing him anymore. Okay, so I feel obliged to talk about this. I think it's a very big story. I can't ask you to comment on this because you can't say anything I haven't said already. Donald Trump laid out a step-by-step plan that he said would force Mexico to pay for a wall along the U.S. border. And he threatened to block billions in aid sent to Mexico by Mexican nationals. And what he said is his first step would be to propose a rule that, quote, no alien may wire money outside the United States without providing proof they are here legally. This rule would specifically regulate Western Union and other wire transfer firms by modifying the post-September 11th USA Patriot Act, according to a plan released by the campaign today. Now, does anyone who listens to this show deny that came from this program? Because we put this up on the air. We said, block Western Union, but we added something to it. Remittance tax on all transfers. This specifically came from the Savage Nation. I didn't say block the transfer of money to Mexico from Mexican nationals living here. I said put a 4% transfer tax on all transfers to Mexico and Russia and China and Poland and Hungary and Italy and Uruguay. In other words, every transfer would have a transfer tax on it that would go to the United States of America. That's called America First. So he was attacked for this right away by the goofball in the White House, who thinks only of what's good for other countries and puts America last. I estimated $24 billion. That's the number that's quoted, by the way, by the Associated Press. That's the number used by Donald Trump. Don't confuse yourself for a minute. I am the idea man in the United States of America in radio. I don't care what anyone says or doesn't say about me. When I see my ideas being offered or used by others, I am very happy. Because I'm like Lao Tzu. I don't care who uses my ideas as long as they use my ideas. That's use enough for me. But they got it half right and they got it half wrong. I didn't say block transfers to Mexico. I said put a 4% remittance tax on all transfers to Mexico. They're not paying taxes on the money. They're basically earning money in America one way or the other, either under the table, over the table, evading taxes, avoiding taxes, getting freebies so they can afford to send money back to their home country. That's not good. If they paid their fair share of taxes here, they wouldn't be having the money, extra money to send back home. So tax it. 4% isn't enough, by the way. Because 4% of $24 billion is not very much money when it's being, when we're bleeding this much money that we are bleeding today. $24 billion in remittances to Mexico, it's probably much higher than that. I don't know the exact number. That's a number I came up with. Surely Donald Trump's people could have gotten better research than me. But okay, I'm glad they're using my idea. But make it a 10% tax. That's only $2.4 billion a year. That's nothing. That's chicken feed. That would hardly pay for Hillary Clinton's campaign. That would hardly pay for Michelle Obama's travels around the world and her 70 assistants for the next 5 years. So we need a higher than 10% remittance tax on the money being sent out of the country. But right away, the goofball attacks Donald Trump and doesn't think of what this means for America, the American taxpayer. He said the notion that we're going to track every Western Union bit of money sent in Mexico, good luck with that. First of all, that's a big lie. Everything that comes out of this man's mouth is political and a lie. That we know. I mean, there's no currency in me telling you Obama's a serial liar or a psychopathic liar or a pathological liar. You know that already. But his statements make no sense. First of all, they do track every Western Union transfer right now. What do you mean the idea that we can track every Western Union transfer? Good luck with that. They do it right now for tax evaders. How come they can track every rich person's transfer of money to overseas accounts and they can't track a gardener's sending of money to Mexico? That's absurd. Every Western Union transfer is recorded and noted and known. And by the way, there are laws on the books right now to track every foreign transfer going out of this country. He's lying again, and he's lying specifically to protect the illegal aliens working in this country, ripping us off by not paying their fair share of taxes and sending the money home to their relatives to prop up their rotten third world socialist dictatorship back home. Other leverage points raised by Donald Trump, spelled out, include canceling visas and hiking entrance fees. Trump predicts that with $24 billion in remittances on the line, Mexico will balk. Trump said Mexicans in the U.S. send about $24 billion a year home to relatives. Again, that came directly from my last book, Government Zero. I think the number is much higher. Washington Post reports that includes all remittances sent back to Mexico from countries around the world, not just those from the U.S. I don't think that's true. Trump said his threats would be lifted after Mexico made a one-time payment of up to $10 billion. It's an easy decision for Mexico, said Donald Trump. Make a one-time payment of $5 billion to $10 billion to ensure that $24 billion continues to flow into their country year after year. Obama, of course, ridiculed the idea. He said the idea was half-baked. He said that the notion that we're going to track every Western Union bit of money as being sent, good luck with that. That's a lie. Then he said if the remittances were halted, that would lead to more immigrants coming north. Well, it wouldn't. If you had a wall, they wouldn't come north. They'd have to stay there in their own country. And then the country would be poorer than it already is, which is not my problem. My problem is the illegal immigrants coming here making this country poorer by not contributing to it. This is not all immigrants. This is not every immigrant. This is not limited to Mexico, but it's primarily Mexico that is causing the problem because we have an open, porous border created by Hillary Clinton when she was a co-president. It was, after all, it was Hillary Clinton as co-president while Bill was diddling around in the East Room, West Room, North Room, South Room, every room. Every room, North Room, East Room, West Wing, East Wing. While the business of government was being conducted, he was chasing interns around the White House. So it was Hillary who was running the country. She is the one who caused this meltdown of our economy, the meltdown of our jobs through NAFTA. Be clear about this. She's not a novice. She's not a neophyte. She's nothing new to the campaign. She's the one who wrecked everything when she was in the White House. Well, how can you not attach NAFTA to Hillary Clinton if you're a leftist? Well, you say, well, I do. That's why I'm voting for the communist Bernie Sanders. Good luck with that. Good luck with that, yeah. Go, Bernie, go. Right to Moscow. Moscow would deport him immediately because they had their share of communism. They know where this kind of nonsense leads. Now, I'm not running for office. Don't confuse me with a politician. But if my ideas are going to be used by a campaign, and I hope they are, I hope they continue to use them, they should get it right. I didn't say block all transfers. I didn't say block all transfers. I said put a transfer tax on all transfers. At first I said 4%, but it doesn't add up to enough money. 10% isn't enough money. $2.4 billion is chicken feed for this economy. And maybe we have to put something like a 30% transfer tax on it. Now, that will deter sending the money overseas, and they may have to spend it here, which would be very good for this economy. You know, maybe they'd have to buy their own things instead of waiting for a government check or something like that. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Corruption in America has never been as great as this, so far as I can tell. Under Barack Obama, corruption is endemic. It's systemic. You know, you look back to the early days of the last century and you can read about the Teapot Dome scandal, which I learned about in high school. It brought down a government. The corruption in the United States of America has never been at this peak. Never. Under this monster in the White House, the corruption is now so out of control that a story came out today that summarizes it all. Pelosi's husband, you know who she is, don't you? Old Nancy, the green energy bumbler Pelosi. Well, the article, if it's true now, I don't know. It came out today in the freebeacon.com based upon congressional financial disclosures. If it's true, it's bigger than Martha Stewart. And you know what happened to Martha Stewart? Pelosi's husband invested in a solar firm weeks before lucrative expansion, says the article, by Lachlan Markey. SunEdison is now eyeing bankruptcy. But Paul Pelosi invested right before 2014 stock rally. House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi's husband bought up to $250,000 of stock in a now financially troubled green energy company just weeks before it announced a major 2014 acquisition that sent stock prices soaring, public records show. Now, as you well know, Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, and the other girls from San Francisco's Sparkling Bay are all big proponents of green energy. They hate oil. They hate coal. Of course, the oil is wonderful because it produces fuel for their G5s. I think one of them flies maybe a G6 by now. I don't think they'd be caught dead in a G4 unless it was a government jet aircraft that they're not paying for at all. But it is fuel, after all, that fuels these beautiful airplanes. Sun Edison told regulators last week that it is eyeing bankruptcy under the weight of $11.7 million in debt. But in late 2014, says the article, investors were bullish on the company, which manufactures and operates solar and wind power facilities. Barry Obama loves solar and wind. Loves solar and wind. Hates coal and oil. In its 2014 purchase of wind energy company First Wind further bolstered the reputation of the company, wrote one market watcher at the time. And quote, perhaps unsurprisingly, Sun Edison stock soared an astonishing 29% on news of this acquisition alone. Pelosi's husband, Paul Pelosi, had invested just in time, you see. Just in time, just by chance. Now, I'm watching the show Billions. There are federal prosecutors that look into insider trading. But in the West, you see, in the West Coast, there is no federal prosecutor. We don't have a Parid Barra. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing the gentleman's name, but in New York State, they have a New York attorney named Mr. Barra, who put away the most powerful politician in the state next to Governor Cuomo. Mr. Holy Roller himself, Sheldon Silver, was marched away in handcuffs for a lifetime of insider trading and other shenanigans. But on the West Coast, you see, we have no U.S. attorney. They don't exist. It's a Wild West out here. Still the Wild West. The article goes on. Pelosi's office did not respond to questions about the timing of the purchase and whether she or her husband had any advanced knowledge of the deal, says the article. The Teapot Dome scandal was nothing compared to what I just read to you. Nothing whatsoever. So what do you do when you have a corrupt president who permits the endemic nature of corruption to seep through the entire, all the halls of Congress? What you do is you impeach him. Isn't that true? So why did the Republicans fail to impeach him all these years? Because they are part of the same one-party system. You know, in every novel, every story, there's a beginning, middle, and an end, and there's usually a hero and a villain. And we all like to see that the hero in the end wins and the villain gets punished. Unfortunately, in America today, the reverse is true. I want to talk about the media love affair that they've suddenly discovered with Ted Cruz. The very left-wing vermin, or shall I say worms? Let's say worms. Vermin is a loaded term that scares people. So we will call the people in the media who I detest with every fiber of my being media worms. And my statement is quite clear. I guess the Muslim terrorists haven't hit us hard enough yet. San Bernardino is now a folk song. Boston now a forgotten memory. All of this danger that our country will face in the future should Hillary win, while ISIS is trying to acquire nuclear material, and individual terrorist cells are being, let us say, investigated in all states, followed in all states, with a leadership who keeps softening the problem, pushing it down the road. In fact, Obama is enabling the Muslim terrorist problem, encouraging it to grow right here. And we're in the middle of a battle for the future leadership of this nation. And in the midst of all of this, the media has suddenly fallen in love with Ted Cruz. Now, why would leftists in the media, the worms that I refer to, suddenly love Ted Cruz? They didn't love him 3 months ago. They love him because they know that he can easily be defeated by their gal Hillary. They want their gal Hillary to win. And they know in their hearts that Cruz can't beat him. That leads us to what happened in Wisconsin. What you witnessed was a political hit job perpetuating a phony personal war against Trump. Now, the media, the worms, used the last 2 weeks pushing a phony personal war on women that Trump was allegedly waging when he wasn't. The governor, the very popular Scott Walker, used his well-oiled political machine to wage his own vote, squashing Donald Trump and supporting Ted Cruz. These super PACs who hate Donald Trump because he is an outsider put all of their tens of millions into this effort to crush Trump. And then there was the supposed local conservative talk radio hosts who ganged up on Trump and jumped on the Cruz bandwagon. These are decent men, I'm sure. I've never heard of them. They're unknown. No one ever heard of them. But all of a sudden, they were regaled as somebody important by the very media that ignores national talk show hosts who are far more important. These nobody talk show hosts knew that Trump was strong. They know that national shows bury them in audience. And, of course, that's why the media jumped on them as important kingmakers and kingbreakers. And it's all for one purpose. They were used. It's sad to say that these talk show hosts in Wisconsin were used for one purpose only, to make sure that Ted Cruz has a chance to stop Trump, with the result being a Hillary Clinton presidency. The agenda is quite obvious. They don't even try to hide it anymore. It's so blatant that they don't even care. They don't have any respect for the voter. Now, that's one topic, and what I'm going to do now, I'm going to read from a chapter called Saving a Nation with Nationalism from Government Zero. This is the most important political book of this cycle. It's still in the bookstores. And whether you buy it or not is not going to change my lifestyle one iota, but it will change your mind. So here's what I wrote. I said, it's time to abandon conservatism as the defining principle of our movement. It has become meaningless. Conservative has come to mean anything anyone who joins the Republican Party says it means. It means small government to one person and big government to another. It means military interventionism to one and isolationism to another. It is nationalism to one and internationalism to another. Any movement that can include Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, Ben Carson, Donald Trump isn't a movement at all. It has no defining principles. It is merely a buoy in the ocean to cling to while gainsaying the other side. We've tried that approach in election after election. It hasn't worked. The progressive juggernaut continues to swamp us while radical Islam attempts to finish us off. Don't get me wrong. I remain as much a conservative as I've ever been, in the true sense of the word. I seek to conserve those long-standing social and legal traditions that have protected our individual liberty and national greatness for hundreds of years. That's what conservatism really means in the classic sense. But when Jeb Bush can promote Common Core in our schools, open borders, and Spanish as a second American language, and call it conservatism, the word has lost its meaning, just as has the word liberal lost its meaning. At one time, liberal meant laissez-faire capitalism, limited government, and personal liberty. Well, I believe in each of those principles, they are missing one important component that makes the rest of them possible. Duty. Liberty and prosperity are not possible without commitment to preserve and defend the nation, without which their existence is impossible. I conclude here by saying, I'm not talking about being enslaved to the government. I'm talking about responsibility to the nation. And here's something that I italicized in my book. The nation and the government are not the same thing. That's what the progressives don't understand. Our forefathers pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to each other, not to any government. The government is just a tool. It can be a means toward preserving the nation or destroying it. I don't think I have to tell you how it's been used for as long as you or I can remember. Decade after decade, the progressives have chipped away at those traditions that defined America as different from every other nation in history. Then the Obama administration came along and replaced the chisels with bulldozers. To counter that, we offered Mitt Romney. Romney is a fine man and loves the country, I think, but he obviously wasn't the answer. He offered what amounted to light progressivism. He wanted to keep the good parts of Obamacare. He wanted to blow up the education bubble even further, just as Obama did. He supported NSA spying and even Obama's horrifying claim that he can kill an American citizen on American soil on his own authority. In spite of these positions, Romney was deemed too conservative by the worms in the media. That's why I say the word has no meaning anymore. True conservatives know what it means, but they didn't come out to vote for Romney. They will not come out to vote for another light progressive like Jeb Bush either. Besides, what good does it do to elect him? We already had light progressivism with his brother. Jeb is even more progressive than George W. Listen to the last paragraph. We need a fundamental political alteration of the monopoly game. I've been saying we need a nationalist candidate for years. Real Americans are starving for one. If a truly nationalist candidate ran as a Republican, he would win the nomination and the general election by a landslide. But if we're going to put a nationalist candidate forward, we need to know what he or she would look like. And then, of course, enter Donald Trump. And then I define nationalism versus conservatism. And I want you to check the book out, and I want you to read it if you have the book. Because coming into this election, there's no more important document, and you must arm yourself with the truth. So again, I have no skin in the game whether Donald wins or loses. I mean, it's not about me, it's about America. I want to stop the Clinton machine from taking over the country and dragging us further down the road of disaster. It's that simple. The greatest threat we all face, gay or straight, black or white, is the Muslim juggernaut attacking the West. Hillary denies it exists. Trump said that it exists. He said he would stop it by banning the importation of any more Muslims until we can, quote, figure this thing out. He surged in the polls when he did that because the average person knows about survival. But as I said at the beginning, I guess the Muslim terrorists haven't hit us hard enough yet. It's politics as usual in this crazy nation of ours. And I'm going to ask you a question. Former Mexican President Vicente Fox is a stone-hearted anti-American racist. Hates Trump in a way I've never seen, and yet he has nothing to say negative about Cruz. You know, that's very telling. The former president of Mexico wrote a scathing opinion piece in which he says, in the London Guardian newspaper, that Trump will drag the United States to the bottom of the ocean, all the way through the shores of ignorance, racism, hunger, and despair. That means the Mexicans may have to take care of their own poor. That's all he means. That means the Mexicans won't be able to send home $24 billion of dollars so that the leaders of Mexico can steal a lot of their money. But why is he not as concerned if Cruz wins? The answer is because he knows Cruz will not do what Trump said he will do. Build the wall and deport people. And so that's something for you to think about. Many of you love Cruz for good reasons or whatever your reasons are. But ask yourself why he poses no threat to people like Vicente Fox. Ask yourself that. And I will say again on this program, as I've said numerous times before, I have no skin in the game if Trump wins or loses. I don't gain or lose personally. I wish others would take that oath on the radio or television and tell us whether or not they have anything tied to a particular candidate. But I assure you, I do not have anything tied to Trump. The only thing I have tied to Trump is my hope that he can defeat this monster, this Clinton monster that's existed many times before. In fact, this Clinton monster has appeared in the Soviet Union. This Clinton monster appeared in China. This Clinton monster appeared in the ex-Soviet bloc states. There's nothing new about this Clinton monster. Now, there's something worse than the Clinton monster, which is the anti-Semitic Sanders monster. Yes, you heard me. I know many of you say, wait a minute, that can't be. He's of Jewish descent. Did you know that Bernie Sanders claimed recently that over 10,000 innocent Palestinians were killed by Israelis during the summer 2014 Gaza war? Did you know that Bernie Sanders said that? Do you know that nobody cites these figures, even the Palestinians? He then said, it's 10,000 innocent Palestinians were killed by the Israelis in Gaza. Did you hear this? Do you understand what this means? Even Palestinian sources estimate that 1,462 Palestinians were killed in 2014. Israeli figures, of course, are lower. But Bernie Sanders is a left-wing communist of Jewish descent. The left-wing communists of Jewish descent happen to be the most anti-Semitic of all Americans. I don't know if you know this. They are naked in their hatred of Israel and naked in their mocking of the Jewish people themselves. And so this is a bigger story, by the way, than the election itself, which is how a man as deranged and anti-Semitic and outright Soviet-style communistic as Bernie Sanders could beat Hillary Clinton. That just shows you what's going on the other side of the aisle. Bernie Sanders making this claim, which, by the way, is so false it should disqualify him immediately. It's far worse than what Trump said about abortion. It's far worse than anything you've heard from anyone on the campaign trail. It's an outright blood libel by Bernie Sanders. If an American Nazi said a thing like this, Jake Tapper would go ballistic. He'd have to go to a hospital from an apoplexy overdose. If a Ku Klux Klan member got up and said this, Wolf Blitzer would probably be hospitalized for a month in outrage. But when Bernie Sanders, a descendant of Jewish people, makes such a blood lie, not a word is said in the media. This is the biggest story within this campaign, which is how an anti-Semite like Bernie Sanders can get away with this. And that's all you need to know about this election. It's a smear job from the top to the bottom. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646. Let me tell you a big note right now. I think you have to understand what I'm doing is making news. I talked about this, and I want you to quote me. This should be spread on Times Square in neon lights. I'll quote myself. I know where Trump stands on immigration. I don't know where Cruz stands. I know where Trump stands on the big banks. I don't know where Cruz stands. Maybe because his wife works for Goldman Sachs. And that's why I think Trump is the best to take on Hillary. Do you understand what I am saying to you? Do you understand how important this differential is? You know, whether you're for Cruz or not, you better be very clear on the fact that he's mush on immigration. His positions, which I read from his own website, are not clear. They're generic. They could have been written by Jeb Bush, George Bush, Lindsey Graham, Bob Dole, Mitt Romney, all the same gibberish. Let's secure the borders. I've heard that from Barack Obama himself. So Cruz does not stand for anything on immigration. If you really care about the topic, there's only one candidate who does, and that's Donald Trump. And that's why I'm for Donald Trump. He's put himself on the line. He has said what he will do. Cruz has not said what he will do. Cruz is nonspecific. So if you're into a popularity contest because you like the way he parts his hair better, or you like the way his smile is as opposed to Trump's smile, well, I can't help you. I'm a man of ideas, not of smiles. I don't care how a man's teeth or hair look. And that's why I implore you to study the candidates very carefully. To me, it's not a popularity contest. I'm not choosing them over the looks. I'm choosing them over positions, number one, and who can beat Hillary, number two, in my opinion. And so, as I said to you, on immigration, Donald Trump is on record. I'll build that wall. He repeated it numerous times. He repeated it on my show on Monday. On Muslims, he stood by his... He was ripped to shreds. They called him every name under the sun, even though Europe is now closing their door to the very Muslims that Trump has said he would not let into this country. He never said anything about Muslims living here already. He said he will not let Muslims into the country until, quote, we can figure this thing out. Can any progressive or Hillary supporter call the show now or in the next hour and tell me the advantage to America to bringing in millions of men of military age of the Muslim faith from the Middle East? Anyone study what's going on in Europe? Why even liberal nations have slammed the door shut to them? So, I mean, if you use logic and you don't just go along with the party line, you'd have to agree that Trump has the right position on immigration. Hillary is for open borders. Hillary stands for the same thing Merkel does, which is the end of borders, language, and culture. So if you hate America, if you say you're a citizen of the world, whatever that means, which is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my life, we're all citizens of the world. I get that. To God, we're all equal. I understand that as well. But in terms of individual freedoms, you're more free here than in any country on earth. You have more opportunity in this country than any country on earth. Why would you want to dilute that? Why would an idiot, like the idiot who runs Facebook, the guy with the undershirt, whose name I forget, Zuckerface, why would this man want open borders? Why would this man disparage America when he's done so well here? I think you can pretty much figure that out. He wants cheap labor. He wants to bring in as many Indians as he can to work for $20 an hour or $25 an hour, as opposed to IT workers here in America who were making $65 to $75 an hour. You see, to the greedy people who run these companies like that, there's no limit to their greed. There's no limit whatsoever. And that's why we need to clamp down on the H-1B visas, which Donald Trump talked about as well. Where does Ted Cruz stand on H-1B visas, Robert? So far as I checked, he never made a statement about H-1B visas, especially after he visited Silicon Valley.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Now, here's the question of the day. To some people, when they hear Trump speak, they get high. They feel oxytocin and endorphins spreading through their body. To others, the opposite. Pain, fear, anxiety, hatred. So we're talking about, why do you fear or hate Trump? Why do all of the New York liberals, like the Woody Allen crowd, why do they hate Trump? What are they afraid of? What is it they fear? What's wrong with these people? Same reason they hate me. It's why I identify with Trump, because he's actually saying nothing different than I said for 22 years. When you think about it, 22 years I've suffered for the very same reasons that, but they ignored me. They were afraid of me, then they ignored me. They treated me like the Stalinists always do. But I survived anyway. So now he's going through the early phase of what I went through in radio, which is hatred like you've never seen. You'll see them jumping aboard ship once he's the inevitable winner. You'll wait and see the very same people who are spitting at him. They'll look for a job. Me, I don't need a job. They do. That's all. And I'm not going to wind up consulting for China, by the way. I'm not Madeleine Albright. And so the main question is, why do you fear or hate Trump? In plain English. I don't understand it myself. Well, I do, actually. They've had it so good for so long. They have so trampled the American flag. They have erased our borders, bastardized our language, erased our culture, so they're afraid somebody might bring some of it back. How hard is it to figure out why the left is out of control? But now we understand the left, but we don't understand the hatred and fear that's coming from the purists. There are idiots in the media who would rather see Hillary win than Trump win. I'm telling you the way it is. These are the people who would rather fall on their sword to show how pure they are. They would rather fall on their swords, like, save your Confederate money, the South will rise again. The Cruzites, the Cruzbots. There's a guy at Fox News who wrote an article, why can't the media stop Trump? They're being told that it's the media who created him, the media should stop him. And we've read it all. Casino bankruptcies, the allegations, the foreign workers to staff his properties and make his merchandise, how he gave money to Democrats, including Hillary, how he changed from liberal positions on abortion and health care. I've heard all of it. But nothing stops him. I've seen all the accusations of him being a racist, and yet I've not heard one racist statement from Donald Trump. I've heard him being called a sexist, yet I've not heard one sexist statement come from his mouth. I've heard the words misogynist. Never heard a misogynistic statement. I've heard the word xenophobic. It is opposite. He's not xenophobic. What, when you defend your own nation, you're xenophobic? That's a trick of the left. Is to control the language. As far as encouraging violence, what do you want him to do? Be run over by a college student who wants to punch him in the mouth? No. He keeps winning primaries. No matter what the media tries to do to him, he wins primaries. No matter what the Mexican president, if you want to call him an ex-president, says, or the Chinese, or the Japanese, no matter what they say, the Teflon Don keeps going. Why? Do you fear him or hate him? In essence, I'm asking progressives who listen to the show because they love me, because they get oxytocin and endorphins out of me. I don't know how that works, but I'm positive that when progressives listen to Michael Savage, they feel safe and calm again. It's like being back home. Then they could say, I listen to him, but I don't like him. But they feel that they have their uncle talking again, the one who knew what was going on, the smart uncle, Uncle Mike. All the progressives who came out west, and they shaved off the hair and shaved the head off, put a ring in their ear, a ring in their nose, and they thought they're wild and free, and I hear their chains dragging, and I hear their rings dingling. They're not free, they're slaves. So when they hear a guy like me, the progressive, they say, oh, I hate him, but I listen to him. Why do you listen to him? Because they know that I'm right. And they get oxytocin and endorphins released in their brain, and their moods go up, and their immune system gets stronger. What is it that they fear and hate? So we have some quotes, for example. Here's an assistant professor at Dartmouth. Says Trump's rise represents a failure in American parties, media, and civic institutions. Shockingly, few public figures and elites are defending the norms of public debate and restraint from violence that Trump is bulldozing. What? Excuse me? What violence? See, these are the same people who've said nothing about Obama, nothing about Obama's violence being conducted in a stealthy manner. Now already they're worried. And here's a guy from the Atlantic magazine, who I never heard of, is appalled by the Trump candidacy. And he says his media profession is no longer a trusted arbiter of the truth. He doesn't know why they're not attacking him. Here's Cokehead Roberts, the one-time ABC so-called reporter and Sunday host, writes with her husband Steve, can Donald Trump be stopped short of the Republican nomination? Probably not, but the rational wing of the party has to try quickly and forcefully to make that happen. So NPR freaks out over that because she's supposed to be a journalist. But she says, I'm not bound by the rules of journalism because I'm a commentator. Anyway, so it's on and on. Then overseas, accusations again. Not only why can't the media stop him, and around the world we see a headline. Around the world, doubts about Trump. And then they go to a guy at the University of Leeds in England, Christine Harlan, who's an expert, don't you know, on U.S. politics. Look at how do they come up with these positions? You talk about a welfare state. There's no greater mini welfare states in the world than universities. They're all welfare states. Unless you're in a hard science or medicine, the universities are nothing but a welfare state for people who can't get jobs in the real world. Who ever heard of a thing like this? So here's a guy, Christine Harlan, who teaches U.S. politics and international political economy at the University of Leeds. Anyway, this person says it's quite clear that people are not happy with the establishment, and they're so unhappy they're willing to overlook some pretty serious xenophobia. Maybe it could be a wake-up call that something has to change. Wow, that's brilliant. Wow, man, she should be a cabinet member in Rubio's administration once he moves to Guantanamo. So while Trump's plans to build a wall along the U.S.-Mexican border and make Mexico pay for it, or temporarily bar Muslims from visiting the United States, his appeal gets wider and wider. There's a reason for it. His vulgar speech. Oh, his vulgar speech. Obama's silk smooth. There's no vulgarity in Obama. He's the cleverest liar in American political history. He has snuck his left-wing agenda right through our political system without a ripple. Because he doesn't do anything that ruffles the feathers. He's a genius at what he does. And yet, here's someone, Zhu Feng, an analyst of South China Sea issues at China's Nanjing University, says, he is a real American. I do not see Trump as below the standards of American politics. He is a new face and a new force, and he carries a lot of the real hopes of American people. Wow, that's pretty good. Oh, I got so bored I watched a NASA show about geniuses, brilliant people at NASA building rockets to Mars. And I said, oh, my God, these are the people I wish to God I knew. Brilliant minds, able to perceive and conceptualize and build vehicles that can go to Mars. Engineering geniuses. Instead, I have to listen to Black Lives Matter, like they should dictate the dialogue in America. Could you imagine? And you know, I sit and watch this and I see communist China all over again. When you see rabble like Black Lives Matter being given any play whatsoever, uneducated, anti-American from top to bottom, and they're being given airtime. Not the guys who developed the rockets that can go to Mars. You hear this? And I see communist China in the making in this country, where the rabble took over China and destroyed everything that was worthy of China's great culture. That's what's going on in this country. Make no mistake about it. I'm a student of history. I see what's going on. So sometimes after retreats, I watch a NASA channel. I felt as though I was back in some rational world. Intelligent men and women, mainly white men, by the way. Sorry to break your heart. You can't fake rocket science. It's not like community organizing. Brilliant men. I mean, talking, ordinary guys. If you saw them in the street, you wouldn't see anything different about them. Ordinary guys. They're planning on a rocket to Mars, and they're talking about how much energy the thing has. It's awesome to see that it's still going on. So one of the things I'd recommend to Donald Trump is that if he becomes president, the first thing he does in science is rebuild NASA and give us back our premier space agency. There's so many reasons for it. I don't want to go into this right now. But one of Obama's first evil acts was destroying NASA. and turning this country into a passenger on a Russian rocket to the space station. He made a second class in the world of space. That's the first thing he did, was destroy us in space. And he got away with it. Why? For the very same vermin in the media who are attacking Trump in plain English. We're talking about Trump because the big question is, why do you fear or hate him? So I had a young lady who's a progressive who said it's because he's not specific. He is quite specific. When pressed on an issue, he will answer the question in my experience. And before we go into taking your calls on this, which I'm going to take, because this is a caller-based show, and the show is booming. I had a weak January in New York and Washington, D.C., because of the snowstorms. I was preempted a lot, and I was wondering what was going on. And then the February came in, and the numbers are through the roof. But having said that, and I'm telling it to you because no one will tell it to you but me, about me. It's like Donald gets up, you know, he taught me it's okay to be successful again. For years, I was like hiding my success. I became embarrassed to admit that I was successful after all this hard work. He made it okay to be successful. You don't have to hide it. You know, it's like if you got it, flaunt it, why not? He's got a plane with Trump on it. Good for him. He didn't take it from you. This is what, see, there's a lot of resentment and jealousy. On the same hand, it's one of the reasons the poor people like him. Because they also want to be rich. It's the old statement. Why does a beat-up poor person go into a church filled with gold and beautiful stained glass and great arches and great architecture and great ceilings? Why don't they reject that? Why don't they want to go into a storefront beaten-up, you know, church? Why would they rather go into some great cathedral? Because they go in the cathedral, they feel rich. They're sharing in the richness of that edifice. It's the same with Trump. He's rich. So a lot of poor people like him. I don't think you understand this. This is the problem with the idiots in the media who are disconnected from reality. All the people who think they're smarter than I am. People you never heard of, who if they write a book, no one buys it. No one reads it, no one buys it. They have no insights because they're disconnected from the man in the street, the woman in the street. I'm not. Although I'm somewhat reclusive, I really have my ear to the ground and I have a great stethoscope. My stethoscope tells me that Trump's popularity bridges the races, the genders, for those reasons. And I told you this months ago, the reason, this was before Nevada. I told you he would do well with Hispanics. And I told you why. And I told you something that the folks in the media who think they're experts don't understand, which is reality. I know reality. They don't. I told you Hispanic men are macho. And they don't want to take, they don't want a woman to tell them what to do. They like strong alpha males. It's the same reason white women are flocking to Donald Trump. They feel protected by him and hopeful again that they can have their country back. They don't want to wind up hiding from the invaders. They don't want to hide from the invaders anymore. They don't want to see what happened in Germany over the New Year's Eve, or what's going on in Sweden where the police are telling Swedish girls to stay in at night because the Muslims and the Africans are raping them with impunity. They don't want that to happen in America. I'm being as clear as I can and as blunt as I can. And I don't understand why even a progressive woman who usually stays out late till 3-4 in the morning, coming from a club, if you want to deal in stereotypes, why wouldn't a progressive woman want someone strong running America? What is it? You want to be threatened in your own country? How stupid can they be? I ask myself. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. The topic has been, why do you fear or hate Trump? You can all break it down to the pleasure principle. Those who hate him fear that he's going to take away their pleasure. Those who love him think he's going to increase their pleasure. You could look at it that way. I mean, there are different ways to look at anything. Not everything has to be two-dimensional. Like, I don't like him because of politics and this and that. Could be that one. That could be one line of reasoning. Another line of reasoning is emotional, along the lines of what I just said. I like this. I like this very much. I know Lenny Bruce would approve of that analysis. May God rest his soul. But I don't know if there's room anymore for humor in this world. I think the purists are so humorless. They're like the Grand Inquisitors during the 1500s in Spain. How dare you? You're not a conservative. I'm a conservative. He's a conservative. You're not a conservative. I'm more conservative than you are. Hello, conservative. How will you have a secret handshake? I'm a conservative. You're a conservative. They're a conservative. They're not a conservative. He's not a conservative. Break the whole world down according to your view. Very smart. Very, very giving. Very forgiving. Very big of you. This whole madness. All we know is this. Trump is surging because his visceral populism has defeated the conservative reformists. Write that down if you want to get very specific. Write it down. Go ahead. Take away cocktail. Walk away cocktail. Walk away with that one. He is winning because his visceral populism is defeating the conservative reformists. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm just telling you what's happening. My job as a commentator is to comment. If I can, I can shape ideas, but you know, that's not that easy. Borders, language, and culture, 22 years, my mantra. Okay, so it's drifted over. Others use it, make believe it's their own good. I'm the Lao Tzu of radio, I like that. Borders, language, culture, but I don't see one or two candidates are espousing borders, language, and culture. Trump and Cruz are as close to that as you're ever going to get. Hillary is the anti-border, anti-language, anti-culture candidate. Don't even mention the old man, please, from the Pickle Factory. Please don't mention the old man from the Pickle Factory to me. I had too much of Katz's Deli. I ran away from New York 40 years ago to get away from the Bernie Sanders of New York. The Spritzers. Why do progressives fear Trump so much? Do they think he's actually going to stop them from having a good time? I haven't heard from one gay person why they oppose Trump. He's never said a negative thing about gay people. I don't get it. It's like an hysteria, mass hysteria. What is it that you fear about from this guy? I don't get it. I just don't understand it. So I say to people who say to me, they're business owners in their 40s, and they say they're a Democrat. I said, I guess you want to pay higher taxes. Let's make it fiscal. Why would you want to pay higher taxes? That's what you're going to get from Hillary. So I don't understand that. Whereas Obama gets away with virtual murder, he does it in such a way, such a sneaky way, that you don't see it. He does it quietly. Countries die. Generals get fired, the military is decapitated and cut to the bone. Supreme Court justices have suspicious endings at hotels in Texas. And nothing, not a word, not a ripple. Instead, you're worried about Donald Trump's rhetoric. So again, I say to you, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, what is it you fear or hate so much? It started with religion. And I ask you, does your religion help you in everyday life and how? Now, how did I get there? I am not a particularly religious person. I'm extremely fearful of God. Let me put it to you that way. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I don't know if you believe what I just said to you. You know, like, I hedge my bets that there's a God up there. He created us and he's watching us. And I'm hedging my bets. I try to do more good than harm because I have to pay for it in the end. So I'm hedging that there's a God and we get judged. So I watch my step, in other words. I'm not inherently good or evil. Although I never was the type that hurt animals, I figure I'm good. I'm never the type that kicked dogs or set cats on fire, although I knew kids who did. I never had those impulses. So I started the day by speaking to somebody I know. And I said to them, do you know that the Jewish prayer book opens with a prayer in the morning? The morning prayer, in which the morning prayer there is a statement. There's a whole sequence, and it says, blessed are you, Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has not made me a woman. He said, that is not true. You made that up. I said, no, it's not misogynistic, but the men say that every morning. Now, I know if the feminists hear this, it's going to cause a lot of problems. They're going to want to burn the Jewish prayer book. They have nothing to say about the Quran, where women are actually turned into slaves, where terrorism is actually encouraged in this whole second half of the Holy Bible that they use. Yeah, read about it. For those of you who actually don't know what you're talking about, their religious edicts tell them to conduct jihad against the entire world. But nevertheless, going back to the prayer book that the Jewish people use, especially Orthodox Jewish people. So in the morning, Jews get up in the morning. They offer thanks to God for restoring their soul within them. And they say, God, thank you for giving us your commandments and commanding us to concerning the washing of the hands. So they wash their hands. That's a good idea. Most people don't know what heathens they are by not washing frequently. They think that it's not necessary. But hygiene is the key to health, by the way. In all of my studies, in all of my years of studying health, do you know that hygiene is one of the number one issues in distinguishing between long life and health and anything else, meaning hygiene, hygiene, hygiene. So having said that, first thing the Jews do is wash their hands. So the second thing the Jews read, Orthodox Jews, is this: Blessed you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has formed man in wisdom and created within him numerous orifices and cavities. It is revealed in them before the throne of your glory that if but one of them were to be blocked or one of them were to be opened, it would be impossible to exist even for a short while. Blessed are you, Lord, who heals all flesh and performs wonders. Now, this shows you that in the ancient days, the Jewish people were aware of anatomy, while others were swinging in trees and behaving like subhumans. The Jewish people were already aware of anatomy before anatomy was even known to the rest of the human race. And they realized that they had vessels and arteries, veins, etc., orifices and cavities. If one of them were to be blocked or one of them were to be open, it would be impossible to exist even for a short while. So when an Orthodox Jew reads this in the morning, what is he saying? He becomes super conscious of the fact that his life is temporal, it's transient, and that he owes his life to God. Do you understand what that prayer is? So then you read on. I'm not going to read any more of it. Read it for yourself. And King of the Verse opens the eyes of the blind, releases the bound, straightens the bowed, clothes the naked, gives strength to the weary, directs the steps of man, blah, blah, blah. And then you get to, Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the Universe, who has not made me a woman. So why would an Orthodox Jewish man thank God for not making him a woman? It's in the prayer book. I have faith in the ordinary man, not in... I have no faith in politicians. I never have and I never will. Some are better than others. Some might give us some of what we want, but I have no faith in them. I have faith in the ordinary man who has faith in God, faith in himself, and faith to do the right thing. That's who defeated the Superman. I wrote that before in some of my previous writings, that it was every man who defeated Superman in World War II. Remember Hitler said his soldiers were supermen? Well, it was every man. It was the Eddie, the guy who went to the Yankee Stadium and watched the ball game and went to dance with his girlfriend on Saturday night, the guy who liked jazz, the guy who liked Benny Goodman. That's who defeated Superman. It wasn't somebody extraordinary. And I think that's what I'm saying. We got to turn back to ourselves here, given the destruction of our faith in leadership. There is none in America. There's nowhere to turn. And we see Republican Party destroying our last semblance of hope in democracy itself. Again, we have to turn inward. So where are the fanatics coming from? They're not coming from the Christian community. They're not coming from the Jewish community. The fanatics are coming at us from the Muslim community. And if you doubt me, then read what Muslims themselves have to say about their own religion and the dire prediction that unless they're reined in within 5 years, this country is doomed. It'll be over because they're on a war path. Read the article from someone who knows. Sebastian Gorka. Breitbart News National Security Editor, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, said that we're going to lose this war against the Muslim hordes unless we talk about the enemy as they are. And he talks about the history of jihad, where it began and how they're winning because we won't even define them for what they are and what their holy book tells them to do. It's an amazing story, which we'll talk about at another time. And the fanatics are also coming at us from the climate world. The gangsters and the green gang. Here's an article on michaelsavage.com from the Providence Journal. Professor says climate change deniers deserve punishment. He wants to prosecute think tanks, advocacy groups, oil companies who don't think the way he does. A so-called professor. This is like Hitler. Name is Michael Kraft. Probably a nice guy. Probably very much in love with himself. The type of guy that you see in restaurants at night. Very civil, very nice. You watch them talk at a table. Very polite. And he wants to prosecute people who don't believe in the big lie of climate change. So you look at this guy, Michael E. Kraft, professor emeritus of poli-sci and public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Not a scientist. He knows nothing about science. He's a political scientist, which means he's an opinionist. He has opinions. Now, poli-sci is all opinions. I love it. They say political science. There was never science in politics. It was all political opinion, political theory. There's no science in politics. And everyone I know who went into poli-sci as an undergrad, I'm sorry to say they couldn't go into anything real. Public and environmental affairs, whatever that means. Again, it's editorializing. University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Oh, there's Professor Emeritus of poli-sci. So it shows you how far they've fallen, these liberals. Or, let's say, pseudo-liberals. Michael E. Kraft, climate change deniers deserve punishment. So we got fanaticism coming at us from progressive left and from the radical Islamists. And the rest of us have to muddle through life the best we can. Does religion help you in everyday life and how? I thought it's a great question. But then I got interested in other topics, including should MMA be banned? And that's because someone died in the ring in Ireland. I was watching it. And many of us think we're very tough because we watch fights. But that's why fights are popular, because people watch them and they imagine themselves tougher than the guy in the ring. But if any one of us who was not a fighter went in a ring with a boxer, you'd be killed with one punch. You went into a ring with an MMA fighter, they kill you with one serpentine blow. They kill you with one punch. And that's why we're fascinated by fighting. Every ancient culture had traditions and contests to see who the alpha male was. It's inherent in the animal kingdom. But humans were the ones to turn it into a contest for entertainment. I don't know of any animals who do it for entertainment. If we watch elk smashing their antlers into each other, it's to drive the other guy out of the little territory so he can have the women elk. But in the human race, we turned it into a contest for entertainment. In the ancient Roman arena, it was a battle basically to torture people to death for the entertainment of the vermin, the pigs who drank wine and sat up there in the arena and watched it. But for much of the 20th century, boxing was the popular blood sport that people would enjoy. Two men standing toe-to-toe, in the beginning no gloves, punching each other to see if one could kill the other one and knock him out. And in the early days of boxing, there were no rounds. There was no limit to the rounds. They fight till one of them lost. Did you know that? Fights would go on for hours. Then eventually rules were enacted. The rules, I think the Marquess of Queensbury, I don't know what the rules were. I'm not an expert on it. But you know the rules of boxing. No hitting below the belt. No rabbit punches to the back of the head. No metal allowed in the gloves. They even regulate the gloves. And it's a highly regulated sport, boxing. And rarely do you have that kind of injury anymore. There were, in the early days, cases of men being killed in the ring. I remember one as a kid watching on the TV with the Gillette blue blades. Who remembers the fight? I don't remember the fighter, but he knocked someone out and killed him. A stretcher job. And it was not something pretty to watch. You know what I'm saying? Now we come to mixed martial arts. It's a practice that developed in secret back rooms in hidden fight clubs because boxing wasn't enough. People wanted more blood. They wanted more blood. And so rules became secondary to the violence that could be perpetrated, right? And MMA became a huge sport, and its heroes were glamorized. And now today a fighter is dead from that brutality. I linked it up. It's pretty awful to watch. He doesn't die in the ring, but he dies a few days later. He got knocked out in Ireland. MMA fighter punched to death in cage from the AP. He was fighting one of the maniac Irish fighters. And he, bang, bang, bang. I think the ref should have jumped in earlier between me and you. And he let him pound him on the ground. He died a few days later. So I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Have we gone too far? Is this what we need to be entertained by? Or shouldn't we talk about banning the mixed martial arts? And then it leads to other things like politics. You're witnessing a blood sport right now in the political arena. The GOP, the Republican Party, right now is engaged in an MMA fight with, for example, Donald Trump and all the other candidates ripping each other to shreds. You're being targeted by this blood sport, and you think that it's something beautiful to watch. But the fact of the matter is it's not beautiful to watch. What's going on in the Republican side of things is the equivalent of the MMA, and while it's highly entertaining, it will lead to the death of the Republican Party, probably already has, as far as I'm concerned. We're watching the vermin who run the Republican Party, the behind-the-scenes boiler room guys, the same type who have flooded America with illegal aliens for cheap labor. They're now flooding America with cheap politicians and denying we, the American people, any candidate that we may select through a popular vote. They do not want that. And so you're watching the death of the Republican Party because it's become nothing but a front group for cheap labor. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. All right, so we're talking about everything from God to steak tartare on the Savage Nation, which I love. I'm so back to being me and doing what I like best, which is having a variety of topics. If anyone says the word delegate, you'll be banned from the show for the rest of your life. I am so not interested in delegates. I'm not interested in the political backroom game playing that has destroyed America and turned this into a laughing stock of the world. So let's talk about the other things, okay? Please. Please, let's do that. And I'm going to read Francis's encyclical on Man and Woman. It's so well, I can't squeeze it in. I have 2 minutes and 40 seconds now till the next break. Our reflection on growing conjugal love from Amoris Laetitia. Laetitia, right. Our reflection on St. Paul's hymn to love has prepared us to discuss conjugal love. This is the love between husband and wife. A love sanctified, enriched, and illuminated by the grace of the sacrament of marriage. You hear how beautiful this is? It is an affective union, spiritual and sacrificial, which combines the warmth of friendship and erotic passion and endures long after emotions and passions subside. Pius XI taught that this love permeates the duties of married life and enjoys pride of place. Infused by the Holy Spirit, he goes on. And I have to tell you that I don't hear enough of this in our society, which is, what can I say to you, so cynical that there's no love left in it. The Spielbergs, the Katzenbergs, have squeezed love out of our society. They've replaced sex for love. When do you ever see love in the movies? When do you ever see a movie that shows the enduring love between a man and a woman as something to be desired? When you have vermin like that, excuse me, worms like that running Hollywood today, who have destroyed virtually every value mankind has held dear to civilization. They are the vandals of our soul in creating this hatred for the divine bond between man and woman. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm the Pope. That's not what I'm trying to do. But I will tell you, if you look at what's being put into the heads of our little children, either you turn your head around and say, God, how could you do this to us? How could you let a society melt down like this so rapidly? How did this happen? We're talking about so many different topics, it's impossible to summarize, which is the kind of show I like the most. And I began with religion. I asked you about religion. Is it a part of your life and why? What does it do for you? Meaning, not as I don't mean like you just go ritually to church or you pray and mumbo jumbo. I mean, is it a part of your life that really matters? Does it do anything for you? Does religion empower you in some way? How? Because we never hear about it. All we see again is Hollywood mocking religious people, calling you basically Jesus freaks. They always make a mockery of you, which is sickening to me. But okay, we know who they are. We know who these mockers are in Hollywood. They've done very, very well indeed. And they do very well in mocking the religious. But you'll notice they only pick on Christians. When did they last mock the Buddhist? All of these brave, brave comedians that go on the Howard Stern show. When have they last mocked Islam? All of these brave, brass men. So in the midst of all of this political turmoil and this madness and this hatred and this anger and these lies, I decided a year ago that I put something out for this exact season, which is my dog book, Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. There's very little politics in it. I can't say there is no political point of view, but it's not about politics. It's about the escape from politics with a dog. But it's a little political, Teddy and Me. It's a delightful book, and it's made to delight. Notice what word is in delight. It's called light. That's why I seek to delight you. Because what we hear normally from the media is the opposite. It's the darkness in you. It's not delighting you. It's depressing you, which is taking the light out of your soul. This is the Savage Nation.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is The Savage Nation. I was getting up today saying, well, what am I going to talk about? It's everyone's talked out. They're repeating themselves. Trump, Cruz, Trump. I've done my share of it. I'm not going to do it again. But if I move too far off that topic, the audience moves to baseball or whatever they do. Apparently, that's all people want to hear. But that's not what I do. So I go to the screen, see the inbox, and my producer, Robert, sends me a link to Salon.com, which is a left-wing publication, an online publication. It says, the talk radio godfather of Trumpomania, what Michael Savage can tell us about America's white working class by Robert Henley. I thought it would be a typical left-wing illiterate hit piece, but it wasn't. It's not exactly complimentary. I was also surprised when one of my publishers sent me this article from MTV News, of all places. Hell's been empty, they write. Welcome to Donald Trump's America. It's been waiting for you for quite a while. And then they go into a long story about Michael Savage and Donald Trump. And again, although they don't like my politics, they've listened for years. And what's interesting to me is that Salon and MTV are writing about Michael Savage in almost complimentary terms. I have to ask you, what are they trying to do? What are they out to do? Why do you think all of a sudden these left-wing publications have noticed me? Both of the people who wrote these articles said they've listened to me for years. And why is it you see nothing about Michael Savage on so-called conservative sites about the power of this audience? They know that there's a power in this audience. MTV News knows it. Salon knows it. They recognize that they don't like my politics, but they know the audience is huge, and I've been around a long time and have influenced a lot of people. They reference borders, language, and culture. How come you don't see that on sites such as Breitbart? What happened? Why would Salon and MTV News write about Michael Savage in almost glowing terms? What are they actually trying to achieve? I linked it on MichaelSavage.com. The talk radio godfather of Trumpomania, what Michael Savage can tell us about America's white working class. That's why I'm reading it. White working class. So let me start with the top. Republicans who want to sideline Donald Trump may think that all of the GOP's problems can be solved by his defeat. But Trump did not cause the great GOP divide. He's merely exploiting it. At its core, the alienation of the party's elite from a huge portion of its base stems from a deep sense of betrayal these voters feel at the hands of the Republican politicians they sent to Washington. Can anyone listening to this show disagree with one word of that opening from a, quote, left-wing Salon.com? I'll continue. All too often, these GOP incumbents, just like their Democratic colleagues, would cash in on their public service to make fortunes as lobbyists, doing the bidding of big business and even of foreign interests, pushing global trade deals that dismantled tens of thousands of factories and idled millions. At the same time, this disaffected base watched as the national government bailed out the banks, squandered the military, abused veterans, built up China, and ran up the national debt in the process. Can anyone listening to this show tell me that that is a left-wing opinion? That's something you'd expect to read in a right-wing publication, isn't it? But no, my friends. Journalism is journalism is journalism. Pure observation is pure observation is pure observation. So they continue. So they write. So just what portion of their oath of office did they keep? Long before Trump's arrival on the scene, they write, it was conservative talk radio host Michael Savage, the ideological godfather of Trumpism, who galvanized this insurgency. Savage gave it a voice and a powerful narrative, one that proved extremely helpful to those like iconoclastic Senator Ted Cruz, who rose to prominence, taking on the very same GOP Beltway insiders that Donald Trump is now making so nervous. But years before Trump, Savage had already redefined the nature of the American political landscape. when he blew up the Republican Party establishment's hold on its working class base. Trump can come or go, but this insurgency has a depth and breadth that can't be ignored. I want to pause there for a minute, because I've said that to myself. What if Trump doesn't make it to the finish line? It doesn't matter to me. I care about America. I'll still be here. I mean, God willing, I'll still be on the radio. I want him to get there, but if he doesn't, it's not the end of my career. I've not been promised anything. Will I support Cruz? We'll have to wait and see. I'm not sure. I may sit the election out. If I think he's just a front for the CFR and he's going to do nothing on the borders or language or culture, I will not vote for him. How's that? No, I will not vote for him because I'll get Hillary in a pair of pants. Right now, it's either Hillary in a pantsuit or Hillary in a pair of pants, so far as I can tell. So he continues, Robert Henley. It's a very interesting article, not just because he calls me the godfather of Trumpomania, but if it was not well written, if there was no literary element to this, I wouldn't waste your time. So I'll read it. He's a left-wing writer for Salon.com who says, I have been a longtime listener to Savage. Listen to this. Because I think that as a journalist, you risk being blindsided if you ignore someone to whom millions of your fellow Americans are tuning in. Wow. Would it be great if we saw one conservative blogger say that about a liberal host, a liberal writer? We don't hear it, do we? I'm afraid to tell you that there's almost no journalism on the side of the right. Almost none whatsoever. It's all hackneyed yellow journalism of the type I despise on the left. They never listen to the other side. They don't hear the other side. They never have anything good to say about the other side. Well, why is it that this writer can say I've been a long-time listener because I think that as a journalist you risk being blindsided if you ignore someone to whom millions of your fellow Americans are tuning in? And then he says, I saw the rise of Trump coming several months ago precisely because I know how deep the support runs in so much of America for Savage's nativist mantra that the very survival of the nation is threatened by the erosion of our borders, language, and culture. How is it that a left-wing Salon can get it right and call it borders, language, and culture, while Breitbart in particular never says borders, language, and culture? Why is that? I'll go on. Between American multinationals who do everything and anything to avoid taxes and American politicians who so often trade on their office to amass vast fortunes. Oh, God. I laid awake last night thinking about Dianne Feinstein. I was boiling in my bed. I was boiling in my bed about Feinstein and the others in San Francisco. The nepotism is greater than that in Napoleon III. Regular working-class Americans feel abandoned. For decades, as businesses have increasingly exploited undocumented immigrants for cheap labor or moved operations out of the country entirely, these voters have become resentful, watching their wages stagnate and full-time jobs with benefits become scarcer by the day. For many of them, Savage's Savage Nation is a kind of sanctuary. For many of them, Savage's show is a kind of sanctuary. In his running commentary, he's gone after the duopoly of Republican and Democratic elites. While Trump was still playing nice in polite society and donating money to Democrats, Savage was building a huge audience, skewering political correctness, and going after what he perceived as the excesses of both parties. Now, remember where this is being written. It's not being written in some right-wing blog. No, you're not finding it on a right-wing blog. It's a left-wing blog. Savage calls liberalism a mental disorder and blames it for the disintegration of a national cohesion that gave America the backbone to conquer fascism in the Second World War and the persistence to outlast the Soviet Union in the Cold War that followed. For Savage, the classical foundations of Western civilization are innately superior to whatever else is out there. This is great writing. This is something that you would expect to read on a so-called conservative blog. So let me continue. Savage will go on populist rants denouncing U.S. multinationals for outsourcing tech jobs. He has zeroed in on the bipartisan tradition of elected officials that go on to enrich themselves by doing the bidding of corporations and even foreign interests. Savage is a raconteur of many parts with roots in New York City where he grew up. He is a best-selling New York Times author, has a master's degree in medical anthropology, and a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley in epidemiology and nutrition sciences. How come they got that right? He is an avid conservationist and animal lover, yet dismisses global warming as a hoax. How come they got that right? Why do I have to embrace the global warming scam run by gangsters bigger than the five families of New York when I know it's fraudulent science? What, I can't love animals and know the truth? I love animals because I think they shouldn't be abused and beaten and starved. I'll read back, go back to you. His extemporaneous musings about his daily comes and goings. His 11-pound poodle, Teddy. Thanks, Ted. I hope his agent doesn't read this because it'll cost me something. And about his days growing up in working-class New York are poignant and display a rich emotional arc. How come a left-winger can write a thing like that? Here we go. Unlike his right-wing colleagues that rant on politics exclusively, Savage's dynamic range makes him engaging company. Thank you. But it's true, I'm a raconteur. And I do have a dynamic range. Thank you for hearing it. The New Yorker heard it first, because the guy who writes for the New Yorker, the article on me in 09, Kalefa Sena, was formerly a music critic for the New York Times, and he knows what music sounds like. So he has range. He just doesn't listen to three notes or one string of a banjo. He can talk to listeners about what he had to eat and drink the night before, and in the process share the vicissitudes of growing older with millions intimately. He's speaking to you and only you, especially if you fit his key demographic, the disaffected white conservative voter. Back in a flattering 2009 New Yorker profile, Savage's show was described as one of the most addictive programs on radio and one of the least predictable. That's true. So he goes on. I first started listening to Savage back in 06 when I was a reporter for National Public Radio affiliate WNYC. Listen to this very carefully. Assigned to cover a press conference convened by Senator Charles Schumer. Schumer was sounding the alarm about the Bush administration's approval of a $6.8 billion deal to have Dubai Ports World, owned by the government of the United Arab Emirates, take over operations at the ports of New York, New Jersey, Baltimore, New Orleans, Miami, and Philadelphia. Critics of the deal, like Schumer, pointed out that despite the close relationship between the United States and the UAE, two of the 9/11 hijackers who had UAE passports also used UAE banks, and that the UAE government was one of the handful of nations in the world to recognize the Taliban's dominion over Afghanistan. As I listened to Schumer, not far from the site of the World Trade Center, I was struck by the seeming incoherence of the Bush administration's quick approval of the deal and their post-9/11 homeland security imperative, which they had used to reorganize American society while putting the nation on a trajectory of perpetual war. Even as the rest of the media was stumbling around to flesh out the details of the port deal, Michael Savage was charging to the air like a 21st century Paul Revere, dubbing the deal Portgate, and urging his millions of loyal listeners to take to the ramparts and loudly register their disapproval. The globalists had to be stopped. Each day, Savage turned the heat up on the Beltway. Anyway, I won't read the whole paragraph. You get the picture. So the article is in Salon.com. It's linked on MichaelSavage.com. Nowhere else can you find it, because I've been blacklisted by all the so-called conservative outlets. The talk radio godfather of Trumpomania, what Michael Savage can tell us about America's white working class. So I ask you again, why would Salon and MTV News suddenly write about me in almost glowing terms? What are they trying to do? Why do you never see anything about me on so-called conservative sites, such as Breitbart, Newsmax, and others? Why are there no links on Drudge? The article came out 2 weeks ago in the New York Times about the power of talk radio in this election. Why was that not linked on the Drudge Report? Because I was featured in it. Because it was my picture, not a picture of someone that you, let us say, would expect to represent talk radio, but doesn't anymore. I do. And so, my friends, I turn to you, because you are the Savage Nation. Why are they doing this? Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646. I'm going to continue reading from the Salon and MTV News articles I mentioned. But I want to say this. You know, no one's ever written a biography of me. This is so... Wait until you hear he talks about the Dubai ports deal. Here is a liberal writer for Salon who recognizes that I stopped the Dubai ports deal along with Chuck Schumer, gives me credit for it, doesn't smear me for it, recognizes the audience's power. Again, no links to the article on Breitbart, Newsmax, or any of the other so-called conservative outlets. Why? What's going on? What's happened? See, the world is changing in so many different ways. There's no longer a single fault line of left and right. There are many fault lines now running through the United States of America. And my personal analysis of this, it's so long, I can't do it in a minute. You know, one of these days I'm going to do an internet special for you on my website for free, not $59 a year. It'll be for free. Because the message is what's important. And in this long, in the ability for me to talk to you in a long format, I'd be able to express myself a little differently than I have now. The pressure's overwhelming. 3-minute breaks, 4-minute breaks. You know, without them, there's no radio. Remember that. So during the breaks, I'd rather that you listen to the advertisers and try to patronize them. Let's not forget that. This is not NPR. We don't live on government grants. We're not provided with a grant from the government where we can do nothing and attract people for no reason and exist. Without my advertisers, I don't exist. So I want to go back to the article in a minute. But the fault lines, as I say, are so pronounced. I believe that these writers in Salon and MTV are terrified of what's happening in their own country. They themselves recognize that they're liable to be pushed aside in their own country. They recognize they could be pushed out of their own country. I don't mean physically removed from their nation, meaning made irrelevant in the coming America that's being reformed by people that we can't even put our fingers on. We know who some of the puppeteers are. We know George Soros is the most evil man in modern American history. We know that if we had a rational government, this government would have investigated him a long time ago, not only for his money trading, but also for his inordinate influence on American politics. So I would say that the show is more relevant today than it ever has been. And the question is, why are these left-wing bloggers or writers or journalists suddenly noticing? What are they trying to do? Good or bad? Devil or angel? Back in a minute. I was playing with my granddaughter. I don't see her much. I see her very rarely. And she's grown so fast. She's 2 years old. And I took her to a little orchard with her parents that I have in a hidden location up in the hill with its own reservoir. And I have fruit trees up there. And everything is in bloom. And it was like walking in a paradise, in a little Garden of Eden. And seeing the child look at a rhododendron maybe for the first time. And telling her the name of the plant, the rhododendron, and showing her other flowers, and showing her fruit trees that are going from flower to fruit. And I look down the hill, and I look up the hill, and I look at the water, and I realize that we're living, many of us are living, in a paradise. We're living in paradise in America. And many of us want this paradise transferred to our, let us say, descendants, our children and grandchildren. We don't want to pass on to them a destroyed nation. And many of us fear that a Democrat, socialist, Islamist presidency by Hillary will destroy that dream, will steal everything we worked for going back all of our generations. And is that a rational fear that Hillary will destroy it? Is it rational, or is that based on a sunny brain or rainy brain? Meaning, are you an optimist or a pessimist? Will she actually destroy the middle class? Is what we're talking about. Will she take away our property rights by taxing us off our own property? Would you work your whole life, let's say pay off a house and want to give it to your child, and then have your child have to pay a tax that's so high that the child can't even inherit that property? That's already happened to a great extent to many people in this country because of previous socialist presidents, whether you know it or not. That's called the inheritance tax. Do you understand what taxation is? It's what caused the first American Revolution. Taxation without representation. The jackal in the White House is a long descendant of these taxation without representation types. I'm also going to do another jump cut now. You're going to have to follow this one. We've gone from Cruz stealing the elections by locking voters out and his mouthpieces saying that that's democracy in action. Next, we went to a man on radio talking about walking around a small property of a fruit orchard with his little two-year-old granddaughter and seeing the delight in their eyes. Then we talked about the grandfather wondering if he'll be able to give anything if Hillary wins because she'll take everything away and say it's unfair. Or the commie seltzer man from New York wanting to take away what this immigrant son built up his whole life. Well, let me tell you something, seltzer man. You'll have to do it over my cold, dead fingers because I'm not giving you my life, seltzer man. I didn't work my whole life that a street rat like you could take it away from me, and I'm not alone. There are 50 million of us, and we're armed to the teeth, seltzer man, and we won't come at you with seltzer bottles, seltzer man. That's what many of us feel. We're at the point of blood in our eyes. Make no mistake about it, we're ready to fight. And we're not going to let anyone steal our land from us and steal our property from us. Under the guise of communism, called fairness, unfairness, income inequality. It's a bunch of garbage. It's communism warmed over. And no matter how you warm over crap, it's still crap. And now I want to go to an animal show. I often watch animal shows. I like to watch them. And one of the most heartbreaking scenes to watch, and very hard to watch, but I watch them, is the savannah in Africa, when you see a band of hyenas hunting down, let us say, a water buffalo. And they pick out the weakest water buffalo. And what do the hyenas attack when they jump on that water buffalo? They don't attack the horn. It's too hard. They avoid the teeth and the hooves of the water buffalo. They're too hard. When you see hyenas jump on a water buffalo, tearing at the anus of the water buffalo because it is exposed and weak, and ripping the animal apart, your heart, you know, goes out to the poor animal, but then you recognize that that's the law of the jungle. And then I think of my nation. This nation is like that water buffalo. And the chief jackal in the White House has torn us apart at our weakest points. The very humanitarianism that made this nation stand above all others. The very humanitarianism that distinguishes us from all other nations is the weakness that is being used by the jackal in the White House and his band of jackals to rip us apart. Using our very kindness to destroy us, I thought to myself. That's what the jackal in the White House has done and is doing. And today we wake up and see why Scalia was, died under strange circumstances in that hotel in Texas. Strange death of Antonin Scalia that has never been covered by the brave men in the media. They'll cover a press secretary touching a fake reporter with a fervor you've never seen in your life. But not one of them spent an ounce of ink on the strange death of Antonin Scalia. And now we see a Supreme Court divided 4-4 on whether or not the jackal-in-chief shall have the power to grant unlimited rights to 4 million, at least 4 million illegal aliens, including voting rights, because you're not allowed to ask for their voting ID, just in time for the election, as he did in the last election. The jackal-in-chief is doing more damage to the very pillars of this democracy that have been done by all previous assaults upon this country. The biggest scandal is this. It came out on Breitbart, I don't know, recently by Julia Hahn, revealed Colorado lawmakers who voted to scrap election are Ted Cruz delegates. I was shocked to read this. Social media posts along with Cruz campaign website reveal that Senator Ted Cruz, R. Canada, supporters in the Colorado Republican Party were responsible for crushing an effort to give Colorado the ability to vote in the state primary. In May of 2015, four Colorado State Senate Republicans killed an initiative to create a presidential primary in 2016, reported the Denver Post. Under the bill, Colorado would have held a presidential primary in March that ran parallel with the state's complicated caucus system. When it came before the Senate Appropriations Committee, four Republicans voted to kill the bill, with three Democrats supporting it. The four quisling Republicans who voted against the initiative, that is to give people the right to vote, were Senator Kevin Grantham, Senator Kent Lambert, Senator Laura Woods, and Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. On Cruz's campaign website, Senators Woods, Grantham, and Lambert are all listed as Cruz supporters and as declared members of Cruz's Colorado leadership team. I rest my case. Would you rather have votes or not votes? Would you rather have a rigged system where only party apparatchiks vote or not? I mean, be very clear about it. There are those supporting this party system which is ludicrous on the face of it, since this entire revolution going on the Republican side is about overthrowing the tyranny of the party bosses, whether they be on a local, state, or national level. Answer that question to yourself before you open your pie hole. Listen to what I just said. Is this entire fervor going on inside the Republican Party, or on the conservative side, or the moderate side, the non-Democrat side? Let's put it to you that way. Okay? Did you hear what I just said? What is it all about? It's about overthrowing business as usual. It's about overthrowing party bosses who make decisions in back rooms. It's about giving the people the power to vote. Is that not true? Well, if that's true, why would you support a system that cuts the voter out and sit there like a jackass and talk about how wonderful it is to cut the voters out and make believe that you're part of the revolution? How can you buy that rubbish? Well, that's what those people are selling you, those four in Colorado and the other states that are stealing it from Trump. Now, if Trump were to go into an election in these states and lose, fine, that's the way it is. He did lose a state or two. That's the way it was. The people had their voice. Do you want the people to vote or not vote? What do you want? What is it that you want? What is it that you stand for? Those of you who claim you stand for something, what do you stand for? What? Manipulating things behind the scenes and cutting the people out? That's what brings about bloody revolutions in nations. Do you know that? What was the war in Iraq for? Was it not to give the people the right to vote? Remember the purple fingers? That's what the $1 trillion was for? To give the Shiites the right to vote? To put a little purple dot on their hand and go and vote? And pick whichever candidate they wanted? Or to sit in their houses and let someone pick the leader for them as you wanted? That's what the war was. How could you not understand this? So that's a big topic, and I think it's worth talking about. And now in the midst of it all, we keep seeing calls for arresting under RICO, charging under RICO anyone who disagrees with global warming, the lie of global warming, which, as you know, is an enrichment scheme created by congresswomen and senators to steal money from the Treasury under the guise of the environment. And so what happened is people started saying, come on, we're looking at the evidence. It's nonsense. It's not there. We don't believe it. So what they want to do now is close off all debate. And these climate groups have gotten together with corrupt attorney generals, such as the Attorney General of New York, along with Al Gore, to put together, they cobbled together an idea now to charge anybody who denies global warming, charge them under RICO, racketeering. Did you hear me? Anyone who denies that there's a global warming reality through evidence that doesn't support it, they want to charge you under RICO statutes, which was developed to take down organized crime. This is pure unadulterated Soviet fascism. And who are these people? Al Gore, 16 Democratic attorneys general. And it came out over the weekend that there was actually a conspiracy between the Democratic attorneys general and these green gangster groups. I have their names. I would like to see the FBI charge these attorneys general and these gangster groups under RICO, because turnabout is fair game. I would like to see the attorney general of the state of New York charged with a RICO statute for conspiring in this manner. Sheldon Whitehouse, Rhode Island Democrat, petitioned the Justice Department to file a racketeering lawsuit against so-called corporations and other organizations that have knowingly deceived the American people about the risks of climate change. Well, new emails have shed new light on Whitehouse, whatever his name is, Whitehouse, Sheldon Whitehouse, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, Lemuel Strolovic, Environmental Protection Bureau Chief for the New York Attorney General, and the names are there. I'll give you the article. All of them conspired together to use the heavy hand of the Justice Department to shut down all discussion of the big fraud called global warming. And what came out in the emails is that these people were going back and forth with each other to how to present themselves to the public. This is a huge topic. Mr. Schneiderman's effort in order to shut down all discussion indicates that Schneiderman is a fascist of the highest order. And I would like to see Schneiderman charged along with all of the other conspirators. I don't care if they're senators or congressmen. under the RICO statutes that they wanted to bring against those of us who know that it's a fraud. I got to tell you how big this is, and I think you can get it. They've joined a lawsuit to try and stop people from even discussing this issue of climate change or global warming. Attorney General George Jepson of Connecticut, Brian E. Frosch of Maryland, Maura Healey of Massachusetts, Mark Herring of Virginia. In my estimation, there are grounds to bring them into justice and try them under RICO statutes for conspiring to shut down a conversation and intimidating people from having a rational discussion about the merits or dismerits of so-called climate change. They should be hung by their own petard. Then you will see justice in America. When you see state attorney generals conspiring like this with green gangster groups, and now they're caught in their own emails, tell me the American people would not cheer to see them let out in handcuffs. Can you imagine Schneiderman being let out in handcuffs along with four state attorneys general? Would that not give you the satisfaction that America's justice system is really working? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Well, I'm looking back on this whole Trump-Cruz battle, and I'm thinking about something that I haven't really thought about till today. I never heard of Ted Cruz until recently. I didn't know who he was. I never heard of him. Much like Obama was an unknown junior congressman, this one was a junior senator. Obama was a junior senator, rather. Unknown. No one really knew who he was. And all of a sudden, he wants to be president and say, well, what about Trump? He's never been in office. Yeah, well, that's a plus, given that there's such a distemper in this country for those office holders and their operations that we look at every day. And he's a successful businessman, and we need someone with some business sense, not another academic lawyer who knows nothing about business whatsoever. And, you know, I love people who say, well, all he is a businessman. He's only interested in money. Isn't it about the economy, stupid? What do you mean, it's not about money? What should it be about if not about money? America's broke, like a basket case with a begging cup. I'm tired of being a begging cup on the world stage. I want America to be proud again. I want the begging cups smashed and turned into a tank. I'd like to convert begging cups into F-21s. That's what I'd like to see. And while we're speaking about that, if I had the power to do this, if Donald Trump should win, and I hope he does, and he would ever say, I don't know if he will, I have no way to know. He said, look, Savage, you know, be a casual advisor on HHS. What would you do to rein in the spending of HHS, Health and Human Services, because the budget now exceeds that of defense? I am, at the end of the day, a pragmatist. I mean, my credentials were established a long time ago. My message has been consistent from the beginning. At my first Paul Revere Society meeting back in 95, 94, I defined my plan as borders, language, and culture, and I've never varied from that. And, of course, I would like to see a real hardline, right-wing, returning war veteran running things in this country. But we don't have a MacArthur. We don't have an Eisenhower, per se. I was a fan of General MacArthur when I was a little kid. I remember it was 1951, 52. I remember it to this day. It was the height of the Korean War. MacArthur was such a great hero, and he was coming through Queens, New York on Queens Boulevard. And he was such a popular war hero, General MacArthur, that the motorcade was going to go right down on Queens Boulevard, and I begged my father to take me there to see him. And those days are long over, where we revere our war heroes. Those days are long over, but I've always remembered how much I would have liked to see a general. Of course, General Eisenhower won. He was a fairly excellent moderate Republican president. Make no mistake about it, Eisenhower was a centrist. Do you understand what I just said to you? When have you seen an extremely ultra-conservative senator ever win an election, let's say at that level? Never. So I'm a pragmatist. And if I can't get MacArthur, I will take Eisenhower. In the political world. Did you hear what I just said to you? I just am tired of losing elections. All you purists, it was so smart.